a legend of one man who persuaded his friends to watch every Godzilla movie ever made. This world is on the brink of destruction. We need you now, Godzilla Evangelists!
Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, produced and hosted by Ryan Sargent, featuring Sam Schlenker and Joanna Brodecki. You know that feeling when you love something niche and tiny and precious, and then suddenly it reaches a wide audience and you get really excited, everybody's really into it, you know, it's finally becoming popular. And then somehow, it all feels so hollow and wrong. That's Godzilla 2014 for me. Send your hate comments now. And here to either hate me or hate along with me are my co-hosts, Sam and Joanna.
Hey!
Hey, it's one of those things.
You have both been like very mum about it in the lead up to this recording, so my heart is palpitating. Also here with us is a buddy of mine, a game animator and designer for his company Well Told Entertainment, Marcus Miller.
Hello.
Woo!
Welcome.
Welcome.
I thought you could, as a animator, you could bring some insight into this newfangled CGI animated Godzilla, because up to now we've just watched the classic man in suit variant.
Right.
So we need somebody to guide us through this strange new world.
Yeah, I mean, animation was one of those things where it was like a magical art form. Like, I came from a very small town, and it was like you started to see this rise of Marvel films, and you're like, oh my gosh, and you know, Toy Story and all that stuff, and you're just like, I want to know how that's done. So, you know, became an animator, realized I hated it and I wasn't very good at it, and then I completely switched to just being like a 3D artist, like an environment artist, and a game designer, and kind of went that route. So it's nice to have that experience, because in moments like these, I still have a degree that says, yes, I can talk about this.
But yeah, we finally jumped way forward in time. I guess we did with the anime episodes before, but
those were also so niche, though, you know?
Yeah.
No B. Cranston in that.
The first proper Godzilla movie we've seen from a later era. How did you guys feel about it? I mean, I feel like you've been clamoring for it for a while.
I'd say I have very lukewarm feelings towards this film.
Okay.
Like a lukewarm hot dog. It's like nothing exciting. It's not going to kill you. That's what it is.
It's a pretty good descriptor.
You know, I actually, I'm going to say that maybe my feelings even out to a lukewarm. But I actually have strong feelings in both directions about different things. That's what I would say. I actually felt strongly about a lot of things. Yeah, I may disagree with you guys on some things.
Yeah, this was the second time I'd seen it. I saw it in the theaters, and I walked out with a stress headache, like, literally. It was like, I had walked in with low expectations, and I still walked out with a stress headache. So this time I was like prepared for what was going to happen, so I was able to like be a bit more objective, but you guys may still have to keep me off the gripe train, because I'm gonna hop on there a lot.
Hey man, that's where we've been before, so we are ready to hear you on it.
Role reversal, sort of.
Out of curiosity, what is so I wasn't really, I didn't care a whole lot when this movie came out, because until you drag me in here, I hadn't seen any Godzillas. So my question is, what is the general fan fan opinion? Broadly, what do people think of this?
I think we'll probably end up touching on this a lot, but it's generally beloved, and that's what's so frustrating to me.
Really?
I see it. I see a 66% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, which does beat the 98 one, but
the wolf most anything does.
Like, for various reasons, I follow Godzilla Facebook groups.
Oh, got it, got it.
And all the time, whenever there's a poll, they're like, legendary Godzilla, best Godzilla.
Ryan,
love this one.
When you say for various reasons, you don't need to hide the fact that it's just because you're a fanboy of Godzilla. We already know that about you. We know that you were...
I'm not hiding that.
It's for research, sure, but I'm sure you were on them before the podcast began. No need to hide it from us.
All right, you caught me. But yeah, all the time, there's very little dissent to the idea that this is the way these movies are supposed to be, and that's frightening to me.
That is interesting.
Yeah, it felt very cookie cutter. It felt like, ah, yep, I've seen this before, and now we're doing it again.
Well, it's funny that you say that, too, because when I told, like, friends and coworkers that I was going to watch it, they were like, oh, yeah, nah. And so that surprises me. I mean, but maybe they aren't on that Reddit. They're on different ones. They're on, you know, normal people Reddits.
Well, if I was guess that's a self burn, because at this point you guys are both in the soup with me.
Oh yeah, so. No, I've checked them out.
Enough cock teasing. There's enough of that in this movie. Let's dive into the synopsis. In 1999, the mysterious Monarch organization investigates a strange cave in the Philippines. Meanwhile, Sandra Brody is killed during a strange nuclear accident in Japan, leaving behind her devastated husband Joe and son Ford.
That's the second door is closing. Not the first ones, but the second ones.
And her springing back to life.
15 years later, Ford is now a soldier, visiting his wife, Elle, and son, Sam. After Joe is arrested for trespassing in Japan, he returns there to bail him out. Joe then convinces Ford to visit their old home in the quarantine zone, where they discover Monarch as a secret base. Soldiers capture the father and son, who witness a giant monster hatching from a cocoon. The monster...
Actually, it's like, yeah.
Yeah, it makes a lot of clicking sounds.
It's kind of and it has like a
fire belly,
yeah.
Fire uterus. I don't know what it has.
Yeah, that didn't look like a belly in that one groin level shot.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
The one that comes out of Vegas is the belly one.
Guys, we're interrupting the synopsis. Oh, we're breaking all the rules today.
That's right.
The monster mortally wounds Joe while escaping into the sky. Monarch scientists tell the U.S. military about Godzilla, another monster pursuing the flying creature they now call a Muto. Ford, Godzilla, and the Muto converge in Hawaii, where the two monsters briefly fight. Meanwhile, a second female Muto emerges from Monarch storage in Yucca Mountain and heads for the West Coast. The military decides to use analog nukes to destroy all the monsters
Hoorah!
Over the objective. very good, very nice.
That was a good buzzing.
After some misadventures, Ford takes a nuke to San Francisco, where the Mutos bury it in a nest. Godzilla fights the Mutos, soldiers take the nuke, and Ford burns the nest to give Godzilla the necessary distraction to win the fight. The nuke goes off safely, somehow, in San Francisco Bay, and Ford is reunited with his family. Godzilla returns to the ocean, a hero.
Yay!
Yeah.
Woo! Wait, actually, out of curiosity, this comes to my first... I have a discrepancy with your synopsis.
Really? Okay, this is the first.
Yeah, so is the implication that the nuke went off?
Yes.
It's not that those people who saved him defused it?
No. You see the mushroom cloud go up.
Oh, yeah. Huh. So it does.
Yep. Oh. We'll come back around to that bit of weirdness.
It was so dark, I will need a re-description again of what happened when we get to it.
That's true. I made the mistake of trying to watch this at 2 in the afternoon, and I was, like, squinting, turned up my brightness all the way.
I watched it, yeah. I was like...
We'll start right at the beginning. Why not? So I actually like the opening a lot. The credit sequence has some, like, cool Ifubuke-esque music and a cool-looking montage that reminds me of stuff that you've done, Sam, actually.
It's funny you say that, because that was actually a reference for me when working on the opening of Mark Wahlberg classic Mile 22.
Oh, my favorite.
But actually it was. That was actually, you know, similar kind of, like, found footage-y, archival footage thing, you know, montage kind of government conspiracy layers.
And the intro was cool because I was like, okay, we're gonna have the seriousness of the OG film within this, and then it quickly faded. But, you know, for a second, I was very excited.
For a second, you had the hope.
The intro is super hype. I really liked that intro.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember it at all. And then I was like, ooh, yeah, this movie looks serious and cool.
Right.
I'll go a step further in saying I agree. I think the intro is great, and I really like the music in this movie. So I'll just throw that in there too.
I think it's pretty good. I really felt let down that they didn't use any of the classic themes. It feels like doing a Star Wars movie without doing the Star Wars theme to me. But that's sort of a fan nitpick. It is good music. And the first real scene is good, too, with that exploration into the mines. It's very, like, it sets me up for disappointment, because it's like a classic Godzilla scene with a modern audience aesthetics. Like, you're going in the mine, and you're like, oh, what's in here?
Well,
it's pretty cool.
I thought that part was kind of cool, because it's like, I'm a big fan of Dug Too Deep stories, and so they're like, oh, man, we've got the Balrog boss, and they go in there, and it's just like, oh, cool, like, dinosaurs, and then it's like, one of them is sort of somehow kind of still decomposing, and it's like hatched or whatever, and it gets out, and then you have that one guy kind of staring through the light portal being like, oh man, what have we done? We didn't do anything.
And then we start meeting, like, the actual characters. So now's a good time to talk about the characters, I guess. Ostensibly, our hero is Ford, who's just the most boring white bread.
Who is that guy? Like, what is he in? CW
he's
look,
kick-ass. But he's like, kick-ass. That guy.
He's kick-ass?
Yeah.
He's kick-ass.
Yeah, he got kind of like, he got meatier since kick-ass, you know what I mean? But he's like, that is actually him.
I've seen kick-ass, but I don't remember him at all. Is he the lead?
He is the titular kick-ass.
You know,
it was funny to me when, you know, the whole movie, like, right out the gate, I was like, oh, yeah, they're kind of doing the classic, you know, the Godzilla King of the Monster, the Steve Martin way of putting a bunch of Americans in Japan from the start.
Yes, I was like, classic Bryan Cranston American in Japan, yep.
Yeah, but then they like, give him legitimately the most joke American name of Ford Brody. Like, like, what? Like, that I actually, like, wrote that down of, like, they're like, yes, our American son, you may not know he's American, but we named him after American car.
Like, no scientists are going to name their son that fratty of a name. I just don't believe it.
No.
Maybe they're naming him after Harrison Ford. That's my only guess. But
this is our son, Chevy Outlander.
You're right. It's a dumb name. And he is just, as I was saying, the most white bread, dumb shit, white boy protagonist.
I compared him to Jake Sully from Avatar, where it's just like, you forget him immediately, like, after you see him.
Just a bummer, because I really liked his mom, but...
Yeah, I love Juliette Binoche.
Yeah.
And she's totally wasted. Bryan Cranston is pretty well wasted.
I have, actually, I'll say something about Ford that's kind of a general thing, which is he, like, it's funny because they give him sort there's kind of an attempt, right, like of giving him something he needs, you know, some kind of goal, something greater, because his parents were so intimately connected with Godzilla and so, you know, in some way. And like, but what's weird is that despite all of that, he still kind of doesn't have much to do on a level other than survive and shoot. You know, it's like, right, it's a little odd.
He makes exactly one decision.
Yeah.
He decides to go and burn the nest. And that's the only decision he makes that impacts the story in any way.
But like, it was funny because at first when they call him into that room, right, and they reveal, hey, this is the truth about all this. This is, you know, Godzilla's thing. You know, they show on that screen, and I'm like, oh, I see. You know, okay, they kind of like found a way to make American soldier guy a little more intimately tied to the greater political meaning of this movie. But then like, but then they very quickly are like, yeah, so you're gonna be a soldier again. You know, just kind of, you know, and it's like him and his wife. Actually, kind of everyone is. It's all they're trying to do is survive.
Yeah, and every time he's like, I know these bombs. I know the bombs. I'm the bomb man. I know the bombs. I'm like, I kind of don't really believe it. Like, I'm like, I don't believe that you're actually that smart.
We didn't
smart.
See him do any bomb stuff. All we saw him do was evade his wife and child, like, multiple times.
That's true. He was very good at ducking.
Honey, wait for me. Yeah. I'm going to go be the bomb guy.
But also, he shouldn't be the bomb guy. The point is that his dad was, like, a scientist who was the most knowledgeable about kaiju of anyone. Like, he shouldn't be bomb army guy.
He should be like smart, throw some specs on him. He has some geographical scientific insights as well.
Right. He should be somehow leading the charge in some way.
Yeah.
You think
right.
You think they could have merged him and the other guy who was like the main scientist.
Yeah, Dr. Sarazawa. I was just thinking how they really should have been the same
character.
Yeah,
that
character.
Would have been really cool.
As is, he's extremely bland.
The name's Ford Sarazawa.
Destroyer of worlds.
But yeah, to come back to Juliette Binoche, did her death actually hit any of you? Because for me, it didn't work at all. It was, fell flat.
It did for me, but I couldn't tell if it was her death or if I was just reminded of all the bad things that happened in Breaking Bad that made me sad when Bryan Cranston is sad. I was like, am I sad about her or when he has to pretend and leave his wife in Breaking Bad? I don't know.
Right. Residual Bryan Cranston feels.
Well, there were two layers of that, because it's like you give it a pass, like that's the more dramatic way. And you know, so you give it a pass for like you get to see her dying in the window and you get kind of like an extra insight into just how like tragic it is for Cranston. But what is funny is that then they have the one door that has a window. It's funny how like once you have a second layer of like weird extra layers of drama, like it becomes too much, because you have the one door closes with the window, and it apparently the system in this building or in this compound is that it has a second layer of like blast doors that give you exactly 2 minutes to look at someone into the window before they close. Right. Like, so that was really that was a little extra. That was a bit much.
Yeah, those doors seem to be designed for maximum trauma.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and also just to be like, hey, remember the wife's in there, audience? And you're like, oh, yeah, because
we didn't know.
Yeah.
Interesting trivia I found out about this. Juliette Binoche said in a interview that Quentin Tarantino had called her and told her that he cried at her death, and it was the first time he had cried during a modern blockbuster.
Whoa.
Interesting.
Yet another questionable decision by Quentin Tarantino.
Huh.
I'm not even saying this because I am a Tarantino fan, because I'm impartial on him, but I actually didn't hate that moment as much as, again, until it was a little much. It wasn't great. But
no,
I didn't
hate it. It just didn't work.
It was fine. To me, it was not my biggest problem with the movie.
The only character who gives Ford a run for his money for blandest is good old Admiral Turkey Neck, as I like to call him.
You know, really fast, I will say that the that guy, that actor, I feel like there's a type, and we met one actually. Ryan and I took UCB Improv together, and we in one of the years there was a, like an actor who just specialized in playing kind of like that kind of military guy, and where it's like that's what they do, and that's what that guy felt like. Is like he is military guy, and like you know he has like one of those four windowed headshot things where it has the four different like professions they could play, but they're all just military.
I guess that pretty much covers it, because we don't learn much about the characters. I guess we have the monarch scientists, right? We have Dr. Sarazawa and whatever doctor poor
Sally Hawkins
is playing.
Great actress who gets nothing. Like,
yeah,
that is crazy. Nothing.
Guys, I would like to venture that if the movie were actually about if Ford were the daughter and Elizabeth Olsen was it, it might have been a little bit more interesting. I always want to not like her, but I always like her a little more than I think I'm going to.
Yeah.
What she played. Thoughts,
yeah.
She played the wife.
Yeah,
right?
She's the wife.
You're talking about? Okay. Yeah,
yeah she. I do really like her in, as an actress.
Yeah.
It's kind of the same thing where it's just too bad because the stakes for kind of everyone are the same. And so it's like she has basically the exact same goal that that Kick-Ass has, right? Where it's like, got to reconnect with the kid and him, you know, and survive this. You know, it didn't quite... Yeah.
She wasn't giving anything, but I would just rather have her have had some more meat.
Yeah, well, I think... Yeah, for
this
sure.
This Ford guy. I would trust my life more in her hands than...
Well, she's a nurse.
He was just kind of boring. Always a nurse, never a doctor, you know?
Just in general, the female characters are more lacking and less interesting than the ones in Ghidra, which was 50 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is
frightening. Though, Millie Bobby Brown coming up, right? Is she the lead? Like, God, I don't know.
I'll give this a pass on its weak female characters, though, because I do think that just kind of everyone was very flat. Like, it really, it was all around. I didn't think there was any one character who really stood out at all.
I felt if they'd given Bryan Cranston an entire movie of character development, he would have been interesting, but they cut him short.
He was a prime example of, if you guys saw the first Doctor Strange movie, where Benedict and Chiwetel are like trying to act their asses off around these very bland lines that they're given and things. I felt like that was Bryan Cranston in this film, like doing his darndest, but just nothing there to work with.
Yeah. I totally agree. Oh, I guess as long as we're on characters, monsters kind of count, right? So the Mutos are fine for me.
Why are they like robots? If they're
are they like robots? I saw them more as like bat
they look
bugs.
Super robotic.
Yeah, they were a little square in the face.
They were like too sleek.
The
glowing
eyes.
I saw that as like an insectoid type of thing, but I can see where you're coming from.
I liked them too. I actually had no problem with them.
The one moment I really love is where they sort of like meet and nuzzle and kiss.
Yeah.
I was like, that's great. But you give them like
when
some...
they kind of bite each other, they're like,
ah. That was like really nice because Godzilla doesn't get to show any love, and he's just there just to stop two lovers. And so he's like, he kind of becomes the bad guy almost.
That's true. Yeah. He does look bad after
that.
Yeah,
it's just Godzilla being a cockblock for 2 hours.
Well, I think he's kind of like a hungover dad. Like, that's why you don't really see him a whole lot, because he's sort of slow and, like, just hungover. Like, oh, God, shut up. Like, they're just being too loud, and he's just going to stop them.
I could agree with that if I had never been introduced to King Kong, who will forever hold the hungover dad role in my heart.
Well, see.
Legendary.
I think they got King Kong is a little more avuncular. He's like drunk uncle, and I think Godzilla is like dad who doesn't approve of this kid and his kid's boyfriend.
Yeah, just like prom night. Like, no, you don't.
Yep.
Having what he calls a good little fatherly talk, but is actually just threatening a 17.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like it. It's what I call a Rancor Keeper crying moment. After that scene in Return of the Jedi when the Rancor Keeper cries. I love moments like that in movies. Like, even when the movie isn't that good, I feel like they lift it a lot for me. Just these little moments where you get insight into a character you wouldn't expect to get insight into.
I liked Godzilla's look, and I think a lot of it is actually the choices they used of how to reveal him. In, you know, there are so many, like the, you know, prime examples, and this is some of the stuff I did like, is like they do a really good job of kind of like giving monsters really great entrances into scenes. And so like the part where they see what they think is his back and it's actually his tail, and then he pops up behind the boat, like that's good stuff.
That was cool.
That's great.
Yeah.
I appreciate that touch. I know people made fun of it a lot as fat American Godzilla when they first revealed it, but once they described him as kind of like supposed to look like a bear, I kind of got it. I was like, oh, okay, this is like,
and he had his classic Godzilla thunder thigh look, you know.
Yeah.
That first shot, just boom.
He kind of was like really chunky and had a really thick neck, and his eyes were like really beady and small, and that just all kind of like helped condense him into this drunk dad character for me.
Marcus, are we getting an insight into your childhood right now? Is this like, do you just say something to us?
No, my dad did not step on Legos, but it's like I sort of see, through the Godzilla lens, I see about like every dad kind of through the one dad.
I kind of see it. He does seem pretty exasperated through the movie.
He does.
Like more so than usual. But yeah, that's the characters / monsters. Let's go do the scenes.
Woo! Whoop.
That there is a trend in this movie of, and there, because it's a recurring character being used as a device, which is there are an awful lot of times that like they have a scene of people being in danger and they amp it up a level by putting a kid in there. And there are a lot of kids and they're all the same age. It's always a 7-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And he has a 7-year-old kid. He saves a 7-year-old kid for some reason on a train. There's later on when they're, I think I counted 4 7-year-old kid situations, only one of which was his kid.
Actual child.
Was his actual child, yeah. But, and that was kind of odd because I actually thought that, I guess that's a character thing, is that they kept throwing these in, like, and it just felt transparent, like, we got up the stakes of this, like, people aren't going to care unless you put a kid in there, but it's too bad.
Right.
Because, and I'll get to the things I did really like about this, but the school bus on the bridge scene and everything being seen from the school bus, I thought was actually really great. And
that driver was great.
I was going to say that driver who just fucking guns it. That is
great,
awesome.
Great,
that's
great.
One of my favorite parts.
But like that scene of if you're looking at the movie as a whole and you're looking at all these sequences and you're escalating the stakes and shooting them in different ways, which I think the movie does actually film all of the scenes of action and destruction differently to keep each one being a little surprising. And so to have one in all seen from the back of a school bus is really great, but we've seen 3 different instances of Godzilla through the lens of a kid already. And so it's like, it right. really kind of puts a damper on an otherwise pretty good scene, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. Agreed. It's funny. It's interesting that you brought that up, because that's the one that works the best for me probably too.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe because it's the one that happens during daylight, so we can actually see what's happening.
Yeah.
Well,
even just the water in that scene, though, like the threat of that, kind of those big, that was cool. Yeah, but we could get to that scene.
There weren't any super remarkable scenes for me in the beginning. I liked the the scene where they do pull in Aaron Tyler Johnson, and, you know, and Serizawa's kind of like, hey, listen, this is what you saw. You know, this is what your dad, you know, it's interesting that you came there because you can actually teach us something about what your dad knows about this. This is why you wouldn't know about it. Bomb test, like the bomb test angle, where they basically all the Godzilla related incidents being all like hidden, you know, the government pretending they were bomb tests. I thought was good. Like, I liked that scene. And that's why I was kind of like bummed that Aaron Tyler Johnson just went back to being a regular old soldier again after that. But I liked that.
Yeah. As long as we're on this scene, this is one of my big beefs with the movie, which is that I hate the sanitized Godzilla origin. I really do. It feels genuinely insulting to have a monster that was conceived as like this symbol of nuclear devastation. And then you're like, nah, that had nothing to do with it. He existed as he did always. And we were just trying to kill him with nukes.
Yeah.
It hits me a little deeper than I would think it would. But I'm just, I don't like it. Yeah, it's disavows all responsibility by mankind for Godzilla. He's just always existed as he did. And it's also strange because the movie is really straight-laced. Like, it's obviously not, like, super grim, but it's very straight-laced. There's very few winks at the camera as, like, dink, we're having a good time. So why would they turn down their shot at having substance? Like, why would they turn down a shot at, like, having some substance behind why Godzilla is?
Yeah, that is a fair point. The movie isn't... That's the problem, right, is that it doesn't have a lot of... All of its issues for me are script things, to be honest. That's where I think it suffers. Because I can actually... Again, almost like all the execution things I actually really liked, and I'll kind of defend. You know, I think that it's like some of the action stuff is shot really well. You know, I like a lot of the effects. The sound design's great. And I really like the music. Like, it just comes down to the script being like so, like almost like so unremarkable in so many ways. And that's one thing. It's just like, you know, it really does not have a lot underneath.
You guys just reminded me of something I wrote down, which is that when I was 13, I wrote an outline for a Godzilla reboot that I wanted to direct someday.
Uh-huh.
And it has a number of really weird similarities to this movie.
Is this why you hate it so much?
Yeah, that sounds like from an ego standpoint.
No, it's not... I'm being sort of facetious. Like, substantively, the story is really different. But here's what was the same. There was a scene where a monster escaped from Yucca Mountain Nuclear Repository and attacked Las Vegas. I had two bug-like monsters that there was a twist that they were male and female. And when they thought they were attacking each other, they were actually mating. I had the buried nest underground, and I had Godzilla killing the queen mama by breathing atomic breath down her throat.
Wow, you're a freaking genius, dude, because
yeah,
that's my favorite part of this movie is just breathing the flame down the belly.
Yeah, I specifically remember writing that wine colored guts would explode everywhere when...
Well, that didn't happen.
When he blew her up. That didn't happen. No.
You know, in your honor, they should, in the next movie, they should name the bland, like, army commander guy Ryan Sargent.
Oh!
That seems like an insult more than anything.
Yeah, it kind of is. I apologize.
But yeah, I love that ending. I mean, I made it up, you know. They stole it from me.
You know what is a moment I really liked? Is and I'll just say again, I kind of mentioned it, but I liked a lot of the like action was, I thought was really like well done, like, and like well handled. And I really liked, they did a good job of, again, like really seamlessly bringing all the monster fights, kind of like obscuring them. So they're not just another monster fight that is these two large things in where like the scale changes a lot. So we see it really from the perspective of smaller things. We do a lot of shooting through objects. So that obscure part of the fight, or, you know, you see things through the window of a car as opposed to, you know, a bus, or, you know, there's one part through a car. I really like that stuff. I loved Godzilla's entrance where you see that there's like a long shot that's panning along kind of like all the buildings in Hawaii that have been destroyed by water. And then you see the two flares shoot up, and then just for a second they light his face and then his body. There's a lot of really good kind of like complex choreography stuff in this movie that I really liked, where stuff like that happens, where, you know, you'll see a scene where the camera will kind of like roam over to the thing, and then, you know, somehow the monster enters and exits, and, you know, there's a lot of like complex choreography, I guess, that was really good.
Yeah, I think Gareth Edwards knows how to really shoot things. This looks beautiful. Rogue One looked beautiful. So that is probably the movie's greatest strength, is how good it looks from a cinematography perspective.
Yeah, and good, like, again, all the monster entrances were really good. Like, there was never a time where it wasn't a good, dramatic, surprising moment when a monster showed up, which is, like, you know, that's beyond cinematography, and that's, like, good direct. Like, here's what I'll say, and this may be a controversial opinion. I don't know. Did he write it?
I don't think so.
Okay. Because I think
he may have, you know, done, like, a final draft, but dust up or something. But yeah,
I had not seen any of his movies. I still haven't seen Rogue One. But this, watching this, I was like, oh yeah, this guy is great for one of these. Like, I would, like, I feel like with a better script, I think Gareth Edwards could do, like, a really good Godzilla movie. Like, that, there were so many good monster moments in it that totally worked and were really exciting.
Now, while we're on this, let's talk about something that's very controversial from a fan perspective, which is the Cocktease fight, where you get the intro to them facing off in Hawaii, and then you just see, like, a little piece of it on a television screen. That's something that a lot of people had beef with, but it sounds like you will defend that as the right choice.
Yeah.
It's, like, it's hard because you're right, Sam, like, the biggest strength was, like, using a lot of this really cool environmental storytelling and, like, cinematography techniques. But then it's, like, and it's great because you get to relate to it from the feeling of being an ant, like, before a giant. But at the same time, like, all the human moments and all the human elements are really boring and, like, you know, just, it's, like, I keep thinking, when I was watching this movie, I kept thinking about Pacific Rim and, like, how they weren't afraid to show the action up front and, like, really give you a sense of like, these are the stakes, I guess, as well as, like, even though the characters were still pretty bland, I felt like they had more dimension just because there was, like, the duality between the two characters. Like, they always had to have, like, a co-pilot, whereas, like, having the main character and, like, his wife be so disconnected all the time, it kind of, like, it that to me is, like, a metaphor for that moment of, like, seeing the first fight through a television. It's kind of like, yeah, we're not directly involved or, like, really present all the time, and so
yeah. Well, that's the difference with Pacific Rim and this is that, I mean, I actually, my issues with Pacific Rim are character issues too. But the one thing that has going for it is that the characters are much more directly involved in the action, right? So it's like they're literally the ones fighting. So for all of its other issues, that is something that has much better going for it. But what I will say is that this, I mean, again, it all suffers from a lack of good script. But like, the escalation of action and keeping and just kind of like from, you know, when you just kind of like move past the fact that the script is just weak, it's like, you know, the way that they escalate the action and, you know, and kind of like tease it out cleverly, I thought was actually pretty good. You know, again, like Pacific Rim is much more like, Pacific Rim has a lot of fights that, it, with the exception of the setting, could actually are just kind of the same. They're shot the same way, right? Which is not a problem. It looks beautiful, but this I thought was a little more clever. But then again, it suffers from a weaker script, so.
Yeah, I see both perspectives. I'm empathetic to both sides here. But I think you hit on a really good point, Marcus, when you pointed out that for the back half of this movie, Kick-Ass has nobody to play off of. There's no other recurring character that's
his
with
dad,
him.
It's supposed to be his dad, and he just disappears. And you're like, wait, I thought Bryan Cranston had mad plot armor, but he doesn't.
Right, I'm sure that was supposed to be shocking, but it does is it leaves you with he's not talking to anyone, he's just like
he has nothing
to play off of except monsters, which he doesn't seem to care about, as Joanna pointed out. So at the very end of the movie, I thought that Godzilla was going to absorb the radiation from the nuke to save everyone and restore his strength. I was like, oh, it's the perfect like
loop
way to zip it up, but apparently it didn't matter that a nuclear bomb went off in San Francisco back. Which is also, like, weirdly, like, twisting the dagger on, like, cutting out all the anti-nuclear stuff. It's, like, not only, like, are they useful tools, but they're not dangerous, apparently.
Okay, also, at what point like, this film had the classic, like, everyone going goo goo gaga for Godzilla and those scientists being like, he's a god. It reminded me of the anime one. I'm like, no, he's not a fucking god, and you're a scientist, and you are aware of the fact that he's a creature of the earth. Why are you scientists are saying that he's a god? But also, can, like, suddenly Godzilla was in the film, but, like, how was he introduced? I don't quite remember it, and was it, like, oh, it's fine, he's chilling, he's just going to save us all. Like, everyone was just sudden. I have an issue always with these narratives when we're going into the back to the fact of, like, oh, now Godzilla's actually a good guy, and we're glad he's here, and we're not worried about his destruction at all, and we love him. Like, when can you remind me of how he was introduced, Brian?
it's a weird, and maybe Sam can help me out here, but it is very subtle. It just sort of happens. Like, just like Dr. Serizawa just says, like, there was another monster, Godzilla, and then he's in the story. Like, maybe we see his spines growing through the ocean, like, one time before that.
Yeah, well, you see it during the opening montage, and then he basically mentions, hey, there's another one, we've been just kind of, it's been around. I mean, yeah, they don't do a great job of establishing the rules of like whether why he chooses to destroy the bad guys only and not the good, you know, like that's a little weird.
Yeah, like, at least with Mothra and King Kong, you know, again, I'm not one for, like, oh, let's just go back to these island people. I'm glad we're hopefully, you know, moving past that idea, but at least then you're like, all right, these people, like, this is their god, this is their thing. But I feel like in the last few films, Godzilla suddenly became the good guy, which he wasn't before, and I just don't quite believe it.
Yeah, I mean, even the anime ones had him as kind of like, he was a little more clear that he was kind of he was equally destructive to humanity and everything, but then you kind of, he faced a greater foe where actually he, you know, he knew, you rooted for him despite the fact that he would just kill a person if they showed up,
right?
You know, right. which this didn't do at all.
And like the fact that he just like went off into the ocean at the end and the scientists were all like teary-eyed, like, our hero, goodbye, we'll see you again. I was like, okay, I'm gonna call bullshit on this, because why is he not destroying anything? Are they not worried about when he comes back? Like, who is Godzilla? That's my
piece thing on top of that was that Godzilla, like, the other monsters are they have rules.
Yeah,
they're very strong rules. It's like they want to breed and they want to eat uranium, like nuclear stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like you get this impression that Godzilla is supposed to fight these other monsters and he's like a predator class to these uranium eaters. But like he fights them and he doesn't eat them or anything. He just kills them and leaves. And so that is what made me think, like, is he just super annoyed by the sounds that they make, and he's just trying to go shut them up, and then he goes back into the ocean to, like, eat fish or something? Like, he didn't have very strong rules. It was just, like, you were just supposed to believe, like, he can see, like, because how he gets set up as the good guy is, like, the spines come out of the water, and he's heading towards the boat, and they're like, oh, shit, he's gonna, like, rip us in half, and then he dives just before he hits the boat. And it's like, does he have eyes on top of his back? Like, how does he know exactly when to dive?
It's a good question. Yeah, they seem to just set up Godzilla as like, look, he's the defender of the Earth. Just accept it.
Which Ryan's like probably the one point about the movie. He's like, yes, Godzilla is my hero.
I'm neutral. I really do wish they set it up better. Like, I gave him a reason to be heroic. Yeah. Any last highlights at all, especially positive?
That was the best part. Again,
I
mentioned the water briefly earlier, but I really did think the like looming waves kind of coming and picking off different. I thought when the plane started crashing as well because the electricity all went out. Was that why? I thought all those elements.
Right. Every time the Mudos showed up, they like EMP'd like a 5-mile radius,
yeah.
I think they
anything
said.
Anything with so, the yeah, bridge scene electrical. Was great, the build was great, the characters were good, and it was bright enough that I could tell what was going on. So just going to give two thumbs up to that scene. Compared to the final one, like when they were in SF, I just really didn't know what was going on.
Oh, I'll defend the, again, in a vacuum, it was a
and
good
maybe explain it to me.
Action sequence.
I didn't.
Well, I could see. I didn't have a problem with seeing any of it. Yeah, it's the funny thing. I actually thought it looked great. maybe that's what
I was.
I can't believe
where
I'm.
Are they?
Am I defending a movie yeah. right now?
No, this is so rare. No, I'm with you. I think, Joanna, we just watched it under the wrong circumstances. We shouldn't have watched it during the day.
I started it's on my laptop and I switched to my TV, but I should have just stayed on the laptop so I could, like...
Yeah, like, it's a movie that's clearly shot for the theater, and that's not something we should hold against it.
Yeah, I mean, that was everyone's criticism of Game of Thrones last week.
Which I could see fine.
And... Oh, sorry, that's a whole other situation.
All right, the time for judgment has arrived. For any new listeners, as well as Marcus, I'm going to explain how this works now. As Godzilla evangelists, we have a holy duty to assign each Godzilla movie its proper place in the afterlife. So we can send it to either Godzilla Heaven, Purgatory, or Hell. And be prepared to defend your decision. Who wants to kick
I'll
us
start.
Off this time?
Like Purgatory for me. Like, I just don't give enough... I don't have enough seething hatred to send it to Hell. But I really just don't give a shit about it. Either way, so it's about it. That's the only two sentences I'm gonna give on it.
Fair enough. Marcus?
Man, like, I really want to send this movie to Heaven, kind of. Like, there's a lot that this movie does do that is really interesting. And as Sam said over and over, the script was pretty flat. And so because of that, I guess it has to go to Purgatory. There's no way I can be like, yeah, you're a holy, like, symbol of Godzilla, but by putting in Purgatory, I guess it could, but it's saying it could be that.
Right, it could be Heaven someday. I'm curious, you seemed fairly down on it throughout, so I'd really love to hear what you liked about it, and I'm sure the audience would too.
Yeah, it kind of, the reason why I didn't like it was a lot to do with, you know, one-dimensional characters, and then a lot of the transitions sort of being really quick, like losing Bryan Cranston, and then the, getting up to speed, like the kick-ass character growing up, like some of these things just, they didn't have a lot of weight to them, but it's like tonally everything was there. Like, tonally this movie, like in the way it was executed, had a certain amount of panache that was like, I don't know, It's
that's a good
panache.
Word though, panache.
Yeah, I think it really just, it comes to full circle when Godzilla kills the last Muto by breathing down its throat. Like that was really cool. And the character, Jake Sully, like the only thing cool that he does is burn down the nest, which was like, you know, sweet. Like, you know, everyone's like leaving out, and he's like, wait a minute, I got a job to do, and goes back and opens up the fuel repo and lights that sucker, and then the Muto mom is like, no, my babies, and goes and checks that out. And that was like, and it's like, you know, they gave the monsters, like the two Mutos had more character than anyone else, I felt like, because they had
that's true,
they had real sympathy and in sort of how they behaved, whereas like, you know, this Jake Sully guy doesn't give a shit about his wife and kid. He's like evading him the whole time, and it's like he basically condemns his wife to die by saying, wait, just stay there, I'm gonna come get you. And it's like, what are you talking about, dude?
That's true.
Tell him, just get the fuck out. Like, you know there's a nuke coming, dude. Why the fuck would you tell her, like, stay, honey, I'm the bomb
guy.
And
that she believed him.
You can trust me.
That she just let her kid go.
So Purgatory it is. But Purgatory. Yeah, thanks for fleshing it out.
Sure.
I, I was curious to hear more. I guess I'll go. I guess I have to emphasize that by no means is this the worst Godzilla movie. Not the most boring. Certainly not the most incompetent from a technical perspective. In fact, it might be the best. Certainly at near the very top. And it's not even the most incompetent from the perspective of just having a good movie.
It's your least favorite, isn't it?
No, it's not.
Oh, okay.
It's not.
Okay, thank God.
I think on its own, it's totally fine. No, this is me saying that despite me grumbling the whole time, this is just a totally fine middle-of-the-road Godzilla for me. But as I said at the top, I'm extremely frustrated by the fact that people like call this like the best one ever, or like maybe the best after the original. Seems to be everything that
that's
people.
Nuts.
What's that?
I just said that's nuts if they think it's the best after the original.
Yeah, this seems to be what everyone wanted, though, which is like shocking to me, because we talk about this on the show sometimes, and I think about it a lot, which is, why do people love Godzilla? And for all those years, the special effects were not what you'd call realistic, at least not by today's perspective. So the reason couldn't be that people just liked like cool special effects in these movies. There's something else. And I'm baffled, because that's this movie's real big win, is gorgeous visually. But that's not what people love about Godzilla. So why would this be the best one? So I want to send it to hell for political reasons, but I have to be objective and say purgatory, that it's just totally fine. I'm so let down that this is like considered the pinnacle by a lot of people.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah, and it's purgatory for me too. And I guess my only thing is that beyond just visually, and again, I've as Marcus said, I've stated so many times that the script, I that's like my biggest disclaimer, is the script isn't good. It's probably a hell script, or like bottom of purgatory. But like the action filmmaking beyond just visually or technical special effects wise, I think that the action filmmaking and kind of like just independent of lame characters, a lot of the choices on how to just shoot a monster movie were, I thought, the strongest of any of the movies we've watched. That's my thought, is that it, like, I thought it was very clever in that way. It was all for naught, because it wasn't a super interesting movie, but that is enough for me to give it that. And put it in purgatory.
I miss the silly characters. I miss my silly, scheming businessmen.
I do too.
And I'm so curious about the 98 film, which I still have not
yet. Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait.
Oh, yeah. When I was in grade school, I'd lost the Halloween costume contest to a friend who went as Godzilla from the 1998 movie. And I was the Red Power Ranger, and I was pretty bummed. But, at the same time, I'm like, yeah, that's pretty cool, though, dude. Like, that's a sick costume, bruh.
Well, you're not the only one to have beef against Godzilla 98.
Yeah. In 1998, I went to Halloween costume contest as Tobey Maguire from Cider House Rules. Oh. I'm totally kidding. That was the only other 1998. I don't even know if that's 1998.
I've never heard of that
movie.
I was
trying to think.
That was a deep cut. It's, for those of you who haven't seen it, it's very erotic. It would be incredibly inappropriate for a 5-year-old to have seen.
1999, 1 year early.
Oh, was it? I'm sorry.
I just had a quick thought, maybe about this being the best in people's eyes. I would say that from all of the ones that I have seen, and what limited knowledge of the Godzilla fan base and film anthology, that this one was like the hypest, I think, from a today's point of view, where like it just like in the executions of shots and stuff, it was just portrayed in like in such a good, like, or, you know, good or bad build, but it had a build of some kind and a very strong payoff at the end. And I think, like, there was just enough, you know, Hollywood kind of McDonald's for people to kind of chew on and kind of get through the whole thing. But, like, I remember being in the theater being like, yeah, that was pretty sweet. Like, that was hype. And then rewatching it now, I'm kind of like, you know, I only remember the hype parts. I totally forgot everything else.
Blacked out the bad.
Right. I guess the moral is people hate old movies, sad as it is. Yeah, we'll see how the sequel goes. I actually have higher hopes for the sequel.
When is that coming out?
May 31st.
Dang, that's coming up.
Oh, we're getting our midnight screening pants ready.
Yeah.
Dang.
We're gunning for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to have a incredibly tired 3 a.m. recording session.
Yep.
Is that film going to be a direct sequel to this, the 2014 one, or is it completely like a reboot?
Yes, it is.
It is? Wow.
Yep. But yeah, as we sort of intimated, I know we've said this twice before, but this time it's really, really for real. Can't trick Sam and Joanne anymore. Godzilla 98 in our next show.
Yes! Finally. Yeah,
that one,
I've been
that one's
waiting.
Going to hell. Spoilers.
The 98, Sam's reaction to a mention of the 98 film is a key piece of why I signed on to help with this podcast.
I'm so glad I inspired you.
See, I've just learned this. So I guess I'm glad that we're getting to it finally from a certain perspective.
I have been hyping up the 98 film for months and I know nothing about it. And I've been hyping it up, so I can't wait to see what's on the other side.
But anyway, let's. We've gotten a lot of nice messages from fans actually over the past few weeks, and we're going to be reading them over the next few episodes.
Yes.
So here's one from Gary I, or part of one. I'm not going to read the whole thing. He says, "Just started listening this week, so I'm relieved to see the hiatus ended just in time for me to start getting into it. You guys rock. It's taken me forever to find a Godzilla podcast I wouldn't be embarrassed for someone to overhear me listening to. LOL."
Yes.
Keep up. And we have succeeded.
We've done it. Now I'm curious to hear what could possibly be more embarrassing than us.
I think it's our healthy cynicism that he's talking about.
Oh, okay.
I actually have a different message. Should I read it now, actually?
Yeah. Well,
is it a hate? Okay. Do we get any hate mail? I'd be curious to hear that as well.
Let me check my inbox.
It's selective hate mail. It's from the opposite perspective. So hold on a second.
I love the hate mail. That's like, you guys don't like Godzilla. I love those ones.
Yeah, let's see in the last
just to be
hour.
Clear, we're not hate baiting people.
I'm missing the point, man.
But here's one from Michael C., which we also appreciate.
Michael Sarah?
I've been catching up with your podcast, Godzilla Evangelist, which I recently discovered. I have been enjoying it, but I gotta say, you put up with a lot of grief from your co-hosts, and I applaud your patience with them.
Right.
Hope you're back on a regular schedule soon.
Hey, thanks, that's why you brought us on.
Yes.
Listen, Ryan, real talk, has anyone voted for a samurai as their favorite?
I think in the continuing collapse of iTunes, we've had trouble getting reviews. But let's talk about that now, actually. If you are enjoying our show, it would be a huge help for us to review us on Apple Podcasts. I think that's what it's called now. It's not iTunes anymore. That review helps us go up in searches. It's just a huge help. It's also a big help if you subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice and on YouTube, and if you sub to our social media and share it around, because we're really trying to get the show to a wider audience, and it won't happen without your help. So all of those things are going to be glorious, and we will thank you very much.
And please catch Sam and I's next minisode on Reddit on who's a more boring character, Daenerys Targaryen or Jon Snow. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's going to be a real slugfest.
Well, nothing can top the main character of this movie, Ford Buick Von
Brody.
Toyota.
No, he's not Japanese.
He wishes he was. Well, that brings us to the end of another episode. We're curious to hear your comments, but remember, it's just our opinion. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
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 Godzilla Evangelists, a Geek Stew Network podcast, is brought to you by me, Ryan Sargent, and my friends, Joanna Brodecki and Sam Schlenker. All our incredible music is composed by Robert Mai, and our wonderful artwork is drawn by Cassidy Stone. Special thanks to our families, friends, and the wonderful artists who made the movies we talked about today. Godzilla Evangelists is a satirical, critical work not affiliated or endorsed by Toho, Legendary Pictures, or anyone behind the Godzilla series. Visit our website at godzillaevangelists.com. We're also on Twitter at GodzillaCast and Instagram at GodzillaEvangelists. If you prefer to listen to us online, we have a YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope you join us next episode. In the meantime, keep spreading the word of Godzilla.